Welcome to the Coworkers Podcast with Jesse and Shaney,
where every believer is a coworker in God's mission. Welcome, friends. I'm very excited. This is my second Saturday night in a row to be spending my Saturday night working on the podcast. I have such a rockin' life, I know, but I can't think of a better way to spend my Saturday night than with my friend and mentor, Debbie. Debbie, welcome, and thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, friend. I have been so blessed and encouraged listening to the Coworkers Podcast. And so to be with you is a joy, and to be able to share some of the things that come from a place that's very near and dear to my heart. So thank you for having me.
Today, we're going to be talking about motherhood on the field. And this will be a real life application of Titus 2, 3 to 5, because I'm asking you as a tiny bit older than me to teach me and train me as a younger woman how to love my husband and children well, and to be self-controlled and pure and working at home and submissive to my husband, but all in the context of the mission field. You have modeled that well, many years of doing missions and motherhood and leadership on the field with your family. So I'm really excited to learn from you. And I want to give a shout out to a friend and listener, Caroline, who sent me the idea for this topic. So thank you, Caroline. And listeners, we love it when you give us ideas and feedback. Tell our listeners just a little bit about your field experience and your family before we jump into the topic.
Yeah, so, well, Stephen and I have been married for 33 years now. And so I would say I'm not just a teeny bit older than you. I think I'm probably a lot older than you. And that was very kind. So thank you for those words. But we began our field service in 1996. We were in the 2+2 program and went out from Southeastern to East Asia with a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old. Thought it would be forever. The Lord returned us to the States for a season. We had 3 more kids. So when the Lord released us from that and called us back to what we would then call home would be South Asia, we had a 11-year-old, 10-year-old, 4-year-old, 2-year-old, and 8-month-old. And so we have served with our organization for about 17 years. And loved every minute of it.
That is a full house with a lot of different ages.
Yes. But, you know, in all things, God is good. And in all things, God pours out grace. And that was really one of the things before we left for East Asia. God just really gave me that verse, 2 Corinthians 9:8. And he is able to make all grace abound to you so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. And I can honestly say that in 33 years of marriage, which has also been ministry, God has done just that. He has been faithful to just pour out grace over and over and over again.
He is faithful. And I hope that comes out clearly as we talk honestly about these challenges.
Yes.
We have different seasons of motherhood. So maybe talk to the mom who is home a lot with preschoolers and toddlers. Maybe she feels a bit disconnected from the work even. Maybe she's not able to be out in it as much as she would like or feels like she should and might be struggling with discontentment or loneliness. Might even be thinking, did I really move across the world to stay at home? Yeah. How would you encourage that mom?
Well, first of all, I think I'd want to affirm that these feelings are normal. I mean, we are made in the image of God, right? So I think we have something innate within us which causes us to want to live a life of purpose. Even for most unbelievers, I think they would say they want to live a life of purpose. But then when you become a believer, or you're called to the ministry, that purpose becomes one of eternal impact. And so to give our lives to things that are temporary, like changing diapers or housework or homeschool or running errands, those things may seem insignificant. And so to the mom who might be struggling with discontentment or loneliness or disconnect, I'd say there's absolutely no shame in having those feelings. And while it might be normal to have those feelings, I don't think it's healthy that we dwell in those feelings. I heard Charles Stanley say years ago that feelings are satanic slush. So we acknowledge them, but we don't live in them, because feelings have a way of making it about us. And we need to remind ourselves. So we need to renew our mind daily in the word and in fellowship with the Lord. And as we do, we confront those feelings with truth. And I think a great example for that is when we look at Psalm 57. This was something the Lord brought me to during a time of kind of feeling some of those things. But we see David in a cave, and though he's been anointed as the next king of Israel, he's not yet living out that role that he's been called to, so to speak. He's not in that cave because he wants to be. He's actually hiding out from the current king, Saul, who wants to kill him. And so we don't see David in this psalm asking the Lord to remove him from his circumstance. He does cry out that the Lord be merciful, and he doesn't woe is me, which is sometimes my default, but rather his confidence is in God, who he says fulfills his purpose for me. David recognized that there was more to the picture than the cave, and his gaze shifted away from himself, and the cry of his heart was, "Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth." He says that two times in that psalm. And so, and I feel like, you know, that is the cry of all missionaries' hearts. You be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. And so being able to look at those boundary lines that the Lord has set for us and be able to say, in this, God, you be exalted. In this cave, in this season, you be exalted. So I believe abiding is pivotal to staying encouraged. And what a precious gift that is that as we're fellowshipping with our Creator, who knows us intimately, who knows our hearts, our hurts, our days, he's perfectly able to give us a word for that day that is exactly what we need to hear and to stay encouraged, to renew our minds. I think I'd also say, this too shall pass. Our lives are so seasonal. In the natural world, these seasons are visible, and you know that there's an order to that. Winter ends, spring begins, then there's summer, then there's fall. But when we feel like we're quote unquote stuck doing what we feel is not purposeful, we may not see it as a season, that it will really pass, and that there is purpose in every season. You know, we see in Ecclesiastes 3 that for everything, there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. So whether it's a hard season or a pleasant one we like or one we don't like, we can know it's good because this is the day the Lord has made, right? We rejoice and we be glad in it. We can trust that the Lord who's ordained our days is using this day for our good and his glory, refining us, making us more like him. And as we submit to his plans in this season, we exalt him.
I'm remembering when I had preschoolers, and I think many, many older moms told me, it's just a season. It's going to pass. And it felt really hard to make that impact my daily life. It felt unreal, you know, and now that I have, I'm basically in the teenage years now, and now I'm that mom who's saying those exact same things. It goes by so fast. Mm-hmm. Don't wish it away. And even affirming a bit of the complicated nature of that discontentment, because I also agree there is a good tension in our hearts when we want to be out there in the harvest. We want to be impacting lostness. That's a good desire. It's a good tension. However, I also know sometimes it can come from my own self-centeredness. It can be just a bit of the unwillingness to do what the Lord has for me, the mundane, you know, the not flashy. Amen to the daily word from the Lord and the just depending on that. You already talked about renewing our minds, which we know is a lifelong process. And it's really important that we're thinking rightly. Many women, I think, feel a tension between the ministry in my home with my family and my kids and my husband, and then the ministry to others, the lost, believers, your community, your church. And we can see they're not fully opposed to each other, right? It's good for our kids to see their moms out serving others and to not have their mom's worlds just revolve around their kids. We also can go too far on one side. We can neglect our families, you know, and we can fail to love our kids and our husbands. That's why Paul told Titus, make sure you're teaching the women to do this. How have you, I guess, renewed your mind, taught yourself to think rightly about that?
I really think you're so right that there is this tension between wanting to do this and wanting to do that. And again, as you just said, is that renewing our mind, that abiding. I've seen in our world today that that ministry that takes place in the home, it's often degraded. Being a homemaker is seen as less than. And I think that's changing, but with the resurgence of the feminist movement that began back in the 60s and 70s, when things like the Miss America pageant was first protested or Roe v. Wade was handed down, we see this notion that anything that has traditionally been done by a woman is less significant than those things that have been done by a man. And so, you know, I believe fully in equal rights, equality. But I love how you phrase that, that we think rightly about our roles. And again, both of these roles as a homemaker and as a worker in the field, those are both two calls that have been issued by the same God. And those roles are not competing, but they complement one another. And so we really need to look at what the Word says and what the Spirit affirms about those roles. And when I think of that role of being a wife and a mother, I think we've got to look back at Eve and see, you know, that God, after he had declared all of his creation good, he looked and he said, it's not good that man should be alone. I will make a helper fit for him. And Eve was created to be a helper for Adam. And that doesn't mean that Eve was lower than Adam or less important. She, as was Adam, was an image bearer of the one true God, but her role was different from Adam's. She was created to be his helpmeet. And I know culturally, that's not politically correct to say that, but the Word says that. And so I believe that living out being a helper to our husband and to our family, it's a good thing in God's eyes. And so being able to embrace that role as this is good. And I don't think being a helpmeet means that the woman does every single thing in the house. There are times when Stephen irons his shirt. There are times when he helps me unload the dishwasher, or he helps out with this or that. And I think it's not just about taking care of physical needs. I mean, it's a lot of times we're strategizing together. He's able to process with me those things that maybe he's stumped on, or even calendaring things. It's just all encompassing in the fact of we are a helpmeet to our husband. And I think of that picture of the early church, and I think of, you know, when the disciples were increasing and there was this need for the widows, and what happened?
They made deacons to to serve the widows.
Right. And why did they do that? What was the reasoning behind that? So that the disciples could do what?
The ministry of the word and prayer.
Right. And so I think that our husbands are uniquely called and gifted by God for a task. And what a gift and an honor it is to be in the place of being their wife, to walk through this and serve them so that they can give themselves to what God has called them to. And I think, you know, even looking down in the rest of that Genesis passage, when God brings Eve to Adam, and then we hear, therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast his wife, and they shall become one flesh. That one flesh, it's more than physical intimacy. That one flesh means we look at this this relationship of a believing husband and wife as a one union partnership that's together, says we want to exalt Christ. And when I first felt called to mission, Stephen had not even felt called to ministry. But when he did, it was a partnership. He was the youth minister. He received the paycheck, but we were partners in that. And so being a believing husband, a believing wife again, we're one flesh. And so whatever the husband does, the wife is doing. Whatever the wife does, the husband is doing. It's a one union partnership that recognizes together we exalt Christ. And so what a beautiful thing to be able to do that in the context of having a partner.
The one flesh, that oneness and the unity is so fulfilling and what everyone wants. And when you're doing that, it really colors the feel of the word helper. It changes it, you know, because of our background and our culture and how we were raised. Most of us are not naturally excited about being a helper. Like, that is not flashy. That does not get you big applause. Kind of like the word submission. We do have to renew our minds, and we have to try to get rid of the wrong thinking we have about those words, because in the Bible, helper is a very important role that communicates strength and bringing, like, adding needed value. It's no easy task. It's no just like, oh, be a little helper, be a little assistant. The famous passage of Proverbs 31, the verses that say the heart of her husband trusts in her and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. That is such an encouragement to me that every day, am I bringing Jesse good or harm? And that could apply to our children too, right? We want to be trustworthy wives and moms that are bringing good to our family every day. And I think when I was newly married, I really underestimated what a big task that was, how much strength and growth and even skill that takes. And same with Titus 2. Titus 2 felt kind of like who's not going to love their husbands? You know, of course I'll love my husband.
Yeah.
But I see, the older I get, the more I see what a serious command that is. Just to dig in a little bit on the challenge of kind of doing it all, you know, I mean, I feel that challenge on a weekly basis of, I want to be sensitive to my kids' needs. I want to also be a good kind of helper and co-leader with Jesse, with our team. I want to be out in the harvest with national partners, and there's so much joy in it. And
absolutely.
Dependence upon the Lord. And it's okay that it's not perfect, but the Lord has grace. We have grace for one another. You know, you kind of are adjusting here and there. But then there are moments when, in the last 6 months, I would say, I had maybe like 1 week where I felt like I was out, like had such amazing ministry opportunities. And I just felt so filled up, you know, just enjoyed it so much. And then the next week, I did feel like, okay, I got to buckle down. I was gone a lot last week. My kids, I need to sit by them and help them with their school and just kind of get everybody back on track.
Yeah.
And I think maybe instead of seeing that as just like, oh, that's a problem, you're messing up, you're too heavy 1 week, you're too light the next, maybe it's more of a constantly responding as the Lord shows you needs and opportunities. And maybe that's just okay.
Yeah, I think it is. I think that, you know, we do find ourselves sometimes more inclined to do this and more inclined to do that. And I don't think that it's something that can be prescribed in the sense of spend this much time at home, spend this much time in the field, because everybody's circumstances are different. I mean, everybody's seasons are different. Kids are different. Needs are different. Even health issues are different. Everything is just, everybody's circumstances is different. That's why we can't compare. We can't look around at what others are doing and think I need to be doing that, or I'm not good because I'm not doing that, or what. But I, during one of those seasons where I just felt like I have got to take off this super mom cape, I cannot do everything, because I looked around and saw there were so many things I was doing, and some of those things I was doing really well, and some of them I was doing good, but some of them I just stunk at. And so I just realized, apparently, I'm doing too many things, that some of these things need to be taken off my list. And there might be some things that need to be added. And so the Lord just really gave me these two questions that I feel like became a framework for me of managing my time. And I want to say up front, it didn't mean that I did exactly what I put down on paper that I was going to do, but it still helped me to be able to stay focused and realize, okay, as I looked back through the month, maybe I didn't do that so well. But those two questions were, number one, who am I accountable for? And so just being able to sit and listen to what the Lord said about that, not what I thought or what someone else thought, but Lord, in your eyes, who am I accountable for? Not who am I accountable to, but who am I accountable for? Who am I responsible for? And the Lord just, you know, of course we know we're accountable for our relationship with Him. But, and then that helpmeet in the home. And once He made this list out of the lost, your team, you know, your prayer partners, all these different things, then the second question was, okay, so what am I accountable to them for? In other words, so what am I supposed to do now that I know that these are the people I'm accountable for? What do I need to do for them? And that looked different in different seasons, especially when it came to the home or to my team or to prayer partners or whatever it was. It just really laid a framework for being able to say, yeah, this is good. This needs to be done. Stay on this kind of mentality. And then to be able, again, like I said, to be able to look back at the end of the month and see, okay, how did that go with the ladies on my team? Or how did that go with my national sisters? Or did I get out in the community enough, or whatever? Just, or do my kids need something else that I'm not providing? So anyway, that's just something that helped me.
Who am I accountable for? And what am I accountable to them for? And to maybe be honest with ourselves about, are we trying to do too much?
Right.
Jesse and I both felt that actually just in the last couple of weeks. And I can very easily notice when I have too much on my plate, Jesse goes down on the priority list. I'm not as available. I'm not like thinking about his needs because I'm so trying to get all my stuff done. He also had a busy schedule. And so we both realized we're getting disconnected. This is affecting our unity. That oneness had gone down, which affected our parenting. It even affected our leading of our team. I don't know if others could notice it. I could feel it, you know, just because we weren't able to communicate and feel united, even like in leading our team together. And so we've had that, you know, okay, let's get some extra time together. Today we went out for breakfast, get that renewed connection. It's okay to have to adjust because it's both, oh, I need to give a little bit more here. And it's also sometimes God gives opportunities, you know, that you just need to take.
Right. Yeah. Everything can't be planned. It can't be put on a paper and calendared in. And so I think we have to, you know, take what he shows us in terms of this is who you're responsible for and what you need to do, but hold that very loosely, recognizing that as we're abiding, then we're hearing from the Lord and we're walking in the Spirit. And so if he says, run up to that chariot, you run up to that chariot, you know, you go south to the desert road. And so being willing to step out of, you know, what we see on paper and take those Spirit-led opportunities. Absolutely.
It's easier to write it all down and make a wonderful plan than it is to respond to those promptings in the moment. When you feel the crunch of the busy schedule, that's what it all comes down to is obeying
especially
him.
Especially when you're a type A personality and you like to make lists so that you can check those lists off. But I think going back to just that thought of deacon and servant and Paul saying he's a servant, he's a bond slave. You know, this is a master-servant relationship we're in with the Lord, and we are not the ones who say what we do. You know, the master says what we do. I played softball growing up, and there were some positions that I really loved, and honestly, I was pretty good at, but I remember one season my mom telling me, don't you go out there and tell the coach where you want to play. You play where he puts you. And I think that is what we see in our relationship with the Lord. We're not the ones to tell the coach, okay, you put me here, or you put me there, or you let me do this, or you let me do that. It's that daily abiding, moment by moment, walking in the Spirit and just following the master. And, you know, at the end of the day, we've only done our duty, right?
Yes. And that also requires that I don't worry about what others are thinking. Right. And I have at times that's been a little thought in my head, particularly if I feel like my kids are needing a lot of attention, then I can wonder, do my teammates not think I'm doing enough? I didn't go to the outreach. I need to be here with this sick child or something. Mm-hmm. I need to tell them, and maybe I do. Maybe that would be helpful to explain, but I'm answering to my master, and that's the most important.
Right.
You shared about some encouragement for the moms of younger kids, and I mentioned I'm now in the parenting teens season. My youngest just turned 12 yesterday. Just give us some good wisdom for parenting teens, and particularly TCKs on the field.
Okay, teens. That's, you know, that's just such a fun topic and a hard topic. And just, I think one of the big things for us when I look back was giving them opportunities to explore and use their giftings, like giving them a passage of scripture, leading a devotion during a youth retreat, or being in charge of a vacation Bible school type program when we were having a team meeting and they were watching the kids, or using musical gifts to lead in worship for family, for team meetings, for people, just really calling them to step up and use the gifts that God had given them. And another thing, creating opportunities if you don't readily have them available in your city for peer study and for accountability in the Word, I think is really important that our teens have that opportunity to grow in their faith from someone who's not just their parent. So giving the opportunity for, you know, singles or other uncles or aunties to speak into their life. And one of the other things I would say, and that my kids would probably say, even as a teen, is to let them grieve. For me, I'm a fixer, and I wanted to fix the hurt of a child missing out on what they were missing out on, or of this goodbyes. And as a, you know, as a child, they hurt, but that intensifies, I feel like, in a sense, as they get older, because you're more aware of the people you left back home, or what other people are doing back home, or, you know, just what they're missing out on. And so I would say, don't dismiss that grief or try to talk them out of that hurt, but let them have a voice in that. I always wanted my kids to recognize God's grace and His sovereignty. And so sometimes I would jump to, oh, He's got this. He's got you. He's good. He's faithful. Don't you remember this? Or don't you remember that? And sometimes they just need to cry and be held. And I remember, and again, this happened when we were in East Asia. So Caleb was just three, but it's such a picture of this. It was one night and he was scared. I think maybe he'd had a bad dream and he was hurting, and I was holding him, but I was saying, oh, Jesus is with you. Jesus is this, Jesus is that. And he said, yeah, but I want someone with legs. And so there's this time that in the body, you know, we comfort one another and we grieve with one another. And so to let our kids also experience the grief of living on the field. But at the same time, I think I would say, be adventurous with them. Capitalize on the fact that you're in a place that's unique, that they have opportunities to do things that kids in their home country don't, that in a way this can kind of offset those griefs of living overseas. I think, you know, they can't drive like all their peers can back home, but they live in a fort that's hundreds of years old that they can explore, or they can't go to the prom, but they can parasail in the Maldives. And so, you know, being able to do these things and calling that up and reminding them that, it is hard to serve the Lord. It is hard to walk in this calling, but one is they use their gifts as they see the lost around them. And as they experience some of the blessing of that, I think we're discipling them through those challenges. And so, yeah, just walking with them through that and praying for godly mentors. Sorry. I think the other thing I'd say, one thing I heard a pastor say at a marriage retreat, and so it's not mine, it's all his, but he said, we take far too much credit when our kids are doing well and far too much blame when our kids are not. And so, you know, it's really easy, I think, sometimes as a parent, especially as a parent of a teen, because you know how you've raised that child. You know, the truths that you've instilled, you know what you've lived out before them. And so for me, who is a perfectionist, I just expect perfection out of them. And it doesn't happen, because it doesn't happen in my life either. You know, as many times as the Lord has told me this or told me that, there's still times that I doubt or I disobey. And so I think being able to give lots of grace to them, remembering they are but flesh, just like God does to us. But also giving lots of grace to ourselves in that, and being able to say, I'm sorry when we mess up, because I know so often, you know, we may be on the other side of it, and just need to be the one to humble ourselves and say, that wasn't right. I shouldn't have responded like that, or I'm really sorry for how that made you feel. Or
Debbie, it's so good. So much good wisdom. I feel like you just gave me so many words of encouragement on how to love my teenagers well, because listening to them grieve, sitting with them in it and letting them and not rushing them is sacrificial love. You know, you have to carve out time for those conversations and you have to let them be long and sometimes at inconvenient times. We've had those moments for sure when our kids say, we just want to be normal kids. We don't want to be missionaries. We weren't called to this. You were. You know, we've had to endure those moments. Right. And they were the this too shall pass moments. Thank you, Lord. But in the moment, it doesn't feel very good. And you have you have to close your mouth for a bit and not try to fix it and remind them of what they have to be thankful for in that moment. Mm-hmm. I also am hearing you say, take good family vacations. Get out there and do the fun things that we have access to and that we can afford, that you can't afford in a lot of other countries. Right. And they're fun, awesome experiences, which is good for all of us. But it really helps bond the family together. Mm-hmm. Kids bond through laughing together and having fun together. That's how families bond in a lot of ways, also in difficulty. But I definitely am prone to take the credit when they're doing well and take the blame when they're not. And we're doing online school. That's my kids' homeschool right now. And so even today, I had to remind myself, I'm not the one who's behind on their classes. My child is behind. I'm not. Why am I getting stressed about this? You know, and just keeping that thinking there. Thank you for those encouragements. And we have a lot of listeners who are preparing to go on the field. And so I want to tell you all, you young couples and young singles, that the little things that you can do to love on our kids and relate to them go a long way. You don't have to spend tons of time with them, but just those little ways you can connect, man, it can be very influential in our kids' lives. And there have been times when my daughter would say her best friends were single ladies on her team, like because she just didn't have a lot of others. And like some of the most influential people in their lives. So it's very humbling when people will love on your kids like that.
Yeah. Loving on them and using that time intentionally to speak truth into their lives. Man, what a gift.
Mm-hmm. I feel like girls naturally do that more than guys. So maybe this is an encouragement for our brothers to also invite our sons out for basketball or to take a walk or to go get ice cream. You talked about giving our kids opportunities to serve and use their gifts and kind of rise up, you know, take responsibility, give this Devo. I believe in you. I know you can. I want you to do it. So can you share a bit more on how you and Stephen have incorporated your kids into your ministry or helped them just serve others?
I guess, first of all, I just want to say I'm a little hesitant to talk about these things because I don't want it to be, you know, about us. But I was just reminded this morning, Acts 14, that when Paul and Barnabas returned to Antioch, they gathered the church together and they declared all that God had done with them. And so from the outset, I want to say this is God's work. We can weed the garden, plow the field, sow the seed. But at the end of the day, it's the Lord who makes it grow. And secondly, I think I'd just say this list, of course, is not exhaustive. There are some key things that stand out. I actually asked my kids this question because I wanted to hear from them because they do all love the Lord and they are all seeking to serve Him. And so I wanted to see, okay, what's your response? So these are just some of the key points that I'll mention. And I want to say also, remember, this is over 29 years of parenting. Our oldest son is 29. And so some of these were regular, everyday things, and others were in this season or that season, and some we did well, and some we could have done better at. And so, again, hear from that heart. I'm going to have to say once again that first and foremost was abiding And you may be tired of that answer, but that was actually what one of our kids said when I asked him this question. I just believe you can't have a heart for the Lord if you're not getting to know the Lord. And so our kids saw us abiding daily, and we took opportunities to abide together as a family that looked different in different seasons, whether it was a toddler Bible or whether it was walking through experiencing God. But it demonstrated the importance of the Word in our lives. And, you know, we all know from Deuteronomy 6 that that's what we're called to love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, and might, that these commands are to be on their heart, to teach them diligently, to talk about them when we sit, when we walk, when we lie down, when we rise. And so it's not just this passing on these biblical truths, but we really want to, first of all, be disciples, but be disciples who are making disciples, because it starts off with love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And so, you know, that's what we would want to pass on to our national partners, right? We invite our national partners into our abiding. We invite them into our EV. We invite them into our discipleship. And our kids are our first disciples. So it's important to not minimize that, but to see it as such an opportunity to invest in them. All of our kids said, you involved us in what you were doing. And one of them said, we had front row seats to what was going on. It wasn't just your work. It was our family's work. And I remember Caleb and Allie, they were toddlers in East Asia. And so having the lost in our home, allowing them to enter into those sacred, quote unquote, family times when we were in the Word, when we were singing songs, praying, even things like decorating our tree, that would be those things that, oh, your family does that, but no, using it as opportunities to launch into the gospel. But just through the years, ministry in our home, whether it was teammates, journeymen, singles, nationals, lost and believing in our homes, doing everyday life with us or celebrating special occasions. Pretty much every year we had Easter and Christmas parties. In one season, we started that youth group in our home, and several of those kids were Buddhist, and one began asking Caleb questions, and Caleb actually led him to faith, and then Caleb baptized him. And so just empowering them again to use their gifts and to walk in what God's calling them to do as well. In another season, we had a girls' Bible club where the girls in the neighborhood, we were living in a Sikh neighborhood, and they would come over. I'd teach them how to bake something, but then we'd walk through creation to Christ stories and we'd eat it. And then they would, you know, be challenged to go share that back with their families. And so in all these different things, our kids were there helping us prepare for these times and serving even during these times. And so even though there was lots of ministry in the home, there was also that ministry flowing out of the home, that going aspect. And when the kids got to an appropriate age, Stephen would take one of them with him as he traveled, and they would be involved in whatever he was doing, sharing the gospel, training believers, whatever. And I remember Allie, she was probably 12. I remember her getting on the back of his motorcycle to take off for a few days on a scouting trip. They didn't even know where they were going to stay. And they actually met someone at a tea stall, not a believer, but they met someone at a tea stall and they offered them to stay in their house that night. And so releasing our kids to do things that might not be comfortable to us as a parent, but recognizing that this grows them in their walk with the Lord and in their desire to be involved in kingdom work. And of course, then there were times that we would all travel with Stephen. And there were seasons, you know, when we were homeschooling, that made that a little bit easier. But even when we weren't, trying to take those breaks of their school break to go with him. Let me go back to that. When we could not go with him, it was always our practice to gather around him and to, he would tell us, what's he going to be doing? We would pray over him, send him off. And when he came back, he would share with us what happened on the trip, how God did this or that. We'd praise the Lord and we'd pray over the seed that were sown. And so even when we weren't out with him, having that opportunity to still stay connected to work, kingdom work, which I think it's all kingdom work. Changing diapers is, it's kingdom work, but that ministry that we deem as kingdom work. You know, building relationships right where we're at in our community, in the market, in the auto, in their school. We would pray for those we were building relationships with, and we would look for opportunities to serve them and to share with them. So whether that meant making cookies with symbols of Christmas and passing them out, or sharing the story of Christmas as a live nativity, or mean going to the slums, making and passing out beggar bags, chipping in money as a family to buy blankets and pass them out to those on the streets, just really giving them the opportunity to see the lost around them and to be involved in that, whether it was praying for them or whether it was serving them. Another thing that they said was they saw us not just training, but actually living out what we were training, like sharing the gospel. So not just training the people on how to share, but actually sharing wherever we were. And then discipling on and off the field. There was a stateside where it turned into a leave of absence, and Stephen would meet every Tuesday at 4:30 in the morning to walk a group of men through the disciple cycle. And he was spending time investing in pastors and lay leaders, doing what he did in South Asia. I was taking ladies through the disciple cycle in our home and at church, and discipling moms on the ball field. And so it wasn't just this thing that we did on the field. It wasn't just this thing we did with nationals or in trainings. It was life. And so they saw that, and they saw how they were involved in it. And I think all of those are great things to do with our kids or model for our kids. But I would also say that a huge component would be prayer. I mean, just praying over them, that Mark 12, 30, 31, that goes back to that Deuteronomy passage, that they would love the Lord their God with all their heart, all their soul, all their mind, all their strength, and that they would love their neighbors themselves. Lord, I pray that they would abide daily, that they would feast on your word, that they would hear from you, they would obey what they hear, so that they, the servant of God, would be thoroughly equipped for every good work. And so praying for them, but also praying with them, praying for neighbors, praying for teachers, for classmates, for UUPGs, for other M's, using whatever that meant, whether it was making a picture book of their friends and family, of using the Window on the World book. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but walking through the nations and having maps and having pictures on the wall, and not just this one set aside time that we do this, but it being throughout the day while we're walking, while we're riding, while we're sitting, that we see someone or something that prompts us to pray, and praying. So just keeping the lost before them and their eyes open to the world around them, I think, just really has helped develop a heart and love for the Lord and the lost.
So much goodness in that, Debbie. Thank you for sharing so many different ideas and encouragement. What can I do today with my kids in my season?
Yeah.
These are all, like you said, over 29 years.
Yeah.
You did different things at different times, and small things are important. Small things go a long way. And sometimes we might even need to adjust our ministry a bit in order to incorporate our kids. Sometimes if we go on a family ministry trip, we'll add a day on. If we're going out in the village, we might go and we're doing trainings. The kids are kind of, you know, in and out of the training, but maybe we'll add a day on to go, like you said, visit a fort or hike a mountain, and just to make it fun for them. Something that sobers me a bit is that what I am modeling for my children in many ways is their picture of the normal Christian life. Reading the Bible every morning is that's what Christians do because that's what they've seen their parents do. I am so thankful. When I would go in my kitchen, I would often see my dad's Bible and his eyeglasses on it. And that was a very small thing, but I noticed, I remember, and I knew my dad was in the Word. But even gospel sharing, think about so many kids who grow up and they never saw their parents share the gospel. So then they had to learn that as an adult. You know, they had to learn, oh, this should be normal for Christians to do. And that's kind of can be an obstacle. So I think of that, like, wow, how I speak about people. My kids are listening. And I think that family Bible study, really fighting for that in all the different seasons, because every season is going to have different challenges. When our kids were in school, we had that morning rush. We didn't have a leisurely Bible study. Then when we were homeschooling and our kids were a bit younger, we suddenly felt this freedom. Oh, we can have this long Bible study. Now they're in like this harder online school and we have to fight to get everybody to the table because they have deadlines and work and they don't want to be working all day. But just fighting to get that time together and getting the Word and showing them that we expect them to obey and expect God to use them and not shying away from that. And even, I think, holding them accountable. Like you said last week, you wanted to share with your friend. Have you done that yet? And I think even that communicates to them, I believe God can use you. Don't minimize how God can use you. I want to speak that into our kids, just being intentional to do that, reminding them when we tuck them in, God wants to do great things through your life. And whatever their current issue is, whether it's loneliness, getting braces, whatever their issue, even just reminding them as we listen and let them share the negative emotions, but also God is not wasting this. He's using it for your good. You can trust him. I appreciate the reminder to take the time, slow down, pray for each other before we head out for ministry. I want to do that more and come back and share what's happened. And I think something that I've enjoyed so much is sometimes for the family Bible study, instead of doing maybe the next lesson, saying, guys, God spoke to me so much this morning. I just want to share with you how God spoke to me, just to show them and help them understand how just when we're reading our Bible on a daily basis, sometimes God speaks to us in a special way.
Sometimes with accountability, I think our kids get to a point, especially as a young teen or a teen, that it is good for that accountability to come from another mentor. Because I remember asking one of my kids, so what'd you learn in the Word this morning? And they said, you know, every time you ask me that, it makes me not want to read my Bible. Because what they were seeing was it was just something they had to do. And so we want them to grow this love for the Lord. We're not trying to push it off as this is religion. You got to do this. You got to do that. You know, we all know that it's not our work. It's Christ's work in us. But we do want to be faithful to spiritual disciplines. And so helping our kids see that, but in a way that doesn't embitter them or cause them to not want to do those things.
That's a good word. This has been both very biblically rich and filled with tons of practical steps and ideas. So,
well, thank you for having me. And I feel like, man, we could just write 10 more books on, you know, this topic. But I think at the end of the day, he's the master. We're his servant. We abide. We listen. We seek to listen well and then do what he says. And so, that's what we're accountable for, right?
That's right. Friends, I hope you can find one thing for you parents. One thing you can do today to love your kids and to serve the Lord where you are.